In Germany, there's a town called Wunsiedel. It's a small town, less than 10,000 people. It's relatively quiet. There's not much at all to put it on the map. But it used to be infamous for one thing. Every August, this town is the burial place of a man named Rudolf Hess, who was a deputy to Adolf Hitler. And his grave is in the town. And every August on his death day, far-right groups would treat the grave as a kind of pilgrimage site. They'd have a huge parade and take over this little town. They'd march through the streets with their flags and their violence and their nationalist slogans to the horror and revulsion of most of the citizens. In fact, every year the local people were so outraged by this and so upset that people would come out and start yelling at the marchers. Every year somebody would take a swing at them. They were always just on the brink of a riot every year, which was exactly what the organizers were hoping for. They were hoping to provoke more violence and a catastrophe. Then one year somebody had an idea. The folks in town put their heads together. They traced the route that the demonstrators always took. And when that day in August came around, they placed signs along the sidelines, which featured motivational quotes and announced that this path was now a charity walk. It would be assumed that anyone who turned up walking that path at that time was a participant in it. For every meter the marchers walked, the townspeople pledged to donate 10 euro to the organization Exit Deutschland, which helps people get out of far-right groups. When the demonstrators appeared that year, the people of Wunsiedel greeted them warmly. They set up a starting line and a finish line at the grave. And when they crossed it, they showered them with confetti and thanked them profusely for their generosity and their commitment to such a good cause. The annual right-wing march has shrunk and shrunk and shrunk in Wunsiedel. In 1994, if you can believe it, the Ku Klux Klan applied to sponsor a stretch of road outside St. Louis, the cleanup of it through one of those Adopt-a-Highway programs. If allowed to do this, they would have been allowed to display their name on signs along the road, announcing it as belonging to them in a certain way. The state legislature tried everything it could think of to reject their application, but for complicated reasons, the law didn't allow them to do that. They couldn't throw the Klan out, or at any rate, they couldn't expel them with the force of the law. But the legislators thought of something else. They changed the name of the road to Rosa Parks Highway. They said the Klan was welcome to tend and steward a road named in her honor and celebrating civil rights. The Ku Klux Klan failed to follow through on their cleanup obligation, and as a consequence, no longer owns any part of that highway. It's an iffy thing to try to throw out evil by force. Often, we just end up meeting violence with violence. But it is possible to make your mark another way, to outflank evil with goodness, to change the landscape, and to make it so inhospitable to evil that evil's put on notice anyway. In today's gospel, we have another instance of two marches happening in the same town. In this case, the town was Jerusalem. And every year, around the Passover time, with that wonderful spirit of liberation in the air, to squash that, the Roman occupiers assembled for a military parade. A huge display of war armor and nationalism and ill-gotten wealth and brute power. If it had been in our time, there would have been tanks and super yachts for sure. It happened every year at that time, so these images would have filled people's awareness just like they fill our newspapers and our TV screens and our cell phone screens right now. Some people had tried meeting force with force, and the results, of course, had been disastrous. But then today something else happened. Jesus comes to town, announcing that Jerusalem is now the site of a counter march with a different meaning, a peace parade, putting evil on notice and denouncing the arrival of the kingdom of God. Jesus is living out here a prophecy from Zechariah in the Hebrew scriptures. Zechariah said, "Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion. Shout, daughter Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, lowly and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." So not a war horse, not a tank, a donkey, a humble donkey, a symbol of nonviolence. And Zechariah says, at that time, the battle bow will be broken, and he will proclaim peace to the nations. This is the vision Jesus has come to fulfill with his competing march. And he's leading a huge crowd, a ragtag crowd of folks who normally never would have banded together. He has so-called sinners and former religious hardliners, poor people and workers and reformed millionaires, folks of different nationalities, women, children, former zealots. He's gathered them all together for his walk, and they have all pledged their support to this different vision of what the world could be. In his imaginative way, Jesus was changing the moral landscape. There's a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon that I love, where Calvin, the little boy, and his best friend Hobbes, the tiger, are headed out to play at recess time, and Hobbes scratches his head and asks Calvin, "How come we always play war? We never play peace." And Calvin thinks for a minute and replies, "Too few role models." It's true. Look at all the training. There's manual after manual if you want to learn how to be a soldier and how to participate in a war. We don't always know strategies for how to be peacemakers. So Jesus, with his great peace march, gives us some pointers here. What can we learn from this passage? First, we can learn, don't lose your joy. A shadow hangs over this march. The shadow of the cross. The shadow of the cross hangs over our world. There is darkness, and it's close at hand. But Jesus's hodgepodge crowd waves their palms and raises their shouts of joy anyway. They remind me of a poem by Rumi, who says, "Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Ours is no caravan of despair." I went to a protest here in town over at Washington Square Park by St. Mary's Church a couple years ago. A whole line of speakers was arrayed up on the stage. There were politicians and leaders, and they were all looking very serious, understandably. As they made their speeches, they stood and they had these solemn expressions. They all had their shoulders kind of hunched. And there on the very end of the line was a little girl, about 5. One of the speech givers in the lineup had brought his daughter. And the whole time, she stood there on the very end, dancing to the music that was playing in the background. The whole time, she stood there dancing. And I was so glad she was there. I was so glad for that beautiful presence of joy, even when things looked so grim. Peacemakers have to nurture an inner child. You have to be able to dance in the middle of everything. You have to keep that joy alive. That's how you keep going. Second lesson from Jesus' peace parade. Remember why you do the work. It can't be contingent on success. I remember preparing to march with the Occupy movement when I lived in Boston. And beforehand, we all were told to write on our arm the number of a legal aid office so that if we got taken to jail, we'd have a good number of a good lawyer to call. And I remember as I sat there writing with that permanent marker on my arm, that really drove home to me, wow, there's a really good chance this is going to go south. Pretty good chance I'm going to be arrested. Jesus knew that his arrest was a virtual certainty, but he made his peace march anyway. Václav Havel says, hope is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something is worth doing, regardless of how it turns out. Third lesson from Jesus' peace march. Follow what you hear God telling you to do. Did you notice how many things Jesus needs in that gospel from Luke that we heard at the beginning? That's kind of cool. He doesn't draw on superhuman powers to bend the world to God's will on his own. He needs help at a lot of points, actually. He needs people to spread those colorful cloaks all along the road to prepare the way and to signal that, yes, this is the king. This is the vision that's coming. He even needed someone to give him a hand up onto the donkey. Did you catch that? And the donkey itself, who is the key to this whole street theater protest that he's got going, he needs someone to offer that. It's a gift from a stranger. In fact, in Luke, he has two strangers, two random people who, when the disciples do as Jesus tells them and say, the Lord needs it, find that's a sufficient explanation for them. That's all they need to hear. Enough said, no questions asked. Take it, Jesus. It's yours. We don't know who these two people were, but hopefully they're all of us. Hopefully we have that responsiveness because God will need something from us along the line. Maybe we'll be asked to give our resources, our possessions. Maybe the call will come for our time or a day that we had planned to spend some other way. Maybe it's our voice that will be needed when we would rather have stayed silent. But in some way, we will all have that same experience. We'll hear a voice saying about something we think of as ours, the Lord needs it. And that's when it will be time to surrender to a larger purpose, to play our part in a bigger plan. You'll know that moment when it comes for you. There's nothing you have to do but just keep listening. Prophecies of peace like Zechariah's, dreams like Jesus had of the kingdom of God, they don't come true without our help. God needs us as much as we need God. We have an active part to play. So lines are being redrawn in the world right now. People who would never have banded together are joining forces. And we're all part of Jesus' revolution, his street theater, his moral imaginativeness, whether you think of yourself as a radical or not. Because when the norm is rudeness and callousness, then kindness is subversive. When the norm is to think only about yourself, then generosity is subversive. When the norm is blaming, understanding is subversive. And when the norm is sniping and fighting, then joy is definitely subversive. As the Wunsiedel marchers proved, what happens on the sidelines can change the whole thing. In our small ways, we can make a difference. We can carry Jesus' protest wherever we go. In Poland, there's a border town called Siemisz. A couple of months ago, it had a right-leaning mayor and a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment, much of it focused on neighboring Ukrainians. There was a lot of rhetoric about how Ukrainians take jobs from Poles and deplete the Polishness of Poland. There was even talk at one point of building a border wall. Sounds familiar. Then came Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and refugees came across the border at Shemesh asking for safety, and overnight, this little town transformed into a huge humanitarian crisis aid center. Dozens and dozens of townspeople came forward. The whole village offered itself to the welcome effort, helping to bring supplies and comfort people and assist them with figuring out what their next step was going to be. In the space of 2 weeks, they became the most welcoming city in Poland. 300,000 people came through. So a reporter asked the mayor, what could possibly have reversed people's attitudes overnight? Days ago, this was the last place you'd expect to be welcoming of refugees. What happened? The mayor shrugged and said, well, a refugee crisis happened. Living, suffering human beings stood before people, and their hearts changed. It was as if they heard about their town. The Lord needs it. And they surrendered it to a new purpose. When Jesus came to town, people saw God and humanity in one person. And their hearts changed. Their hearts were opened. When God and humanity converge, when God and human beings work together in one place, the whole landscape can change. So, wanderers, worshipers, lovers of leaving, hold on to your joy. Sharpen your moral imagination. You're going to need it. Hold on to your hope. Listen for what God needs from you. And try to outflank evil with good and create a world so kind, so just, so compassionate that hate has no place to call home. Come, come, whoever you are. Ours is no caravan of despair.